Here Be Monsters is a podcast about facing the unknown.
I start to float away from the earth.
Have you ever smoked crack before?
We're all kind of frantically searching for meaning.
They have the neurotransmitters.
I think we're all juggalos in some way.
Yo, we're not broken.
Crazed delinquents.
We're in our last days, young man.
Listen to Here Be Monsters,
the podcast about the unknown,
on the KCRW iTunes page.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gudolf Zinterberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. I'm very happy to have two writers today as my guests. They've put together a book called Selected Tweets. You can open it in either direction. One cover has silver letters. It says Selected Tweets, Tao Lin. And on the opposite cover, Selected Tweets in Gold Letters by Mira Gonzalez. Tao Lin and Mira Gonzalez are my guests, and we're talking about Selected Tweets, and we're going to take up the battle to see in what ways tweeting can be a literary and poetic form. Now, first of all, my two guests have both been in an anthology which is called 40 Likely to Die Before 40. And when I saw the title, I thought, gee, that's a harsh prediction. How do you feel about that kind of characterization of what's being called alt-lit?
I didn't like that title of the anthology, even though there might have been a few years where, not a few years, maybe a year where I was probably more likely than an average person to die before 40 because I was using a lot of drugs and feeling, just not thinking about the future a lot. But I don't like that title. It's too provocative. And in terms of alt-lit, I don't like the term. I always try to avoid terms because when you have a term, you're grouping a lot of different writers together, and it just takes away the focus on each individual writer and gives it to some abstraction, which is the term alt-lit in our case.
Mira.
I agree with Tao in that I have always felt aversion to being labeled with the term alt-lit, in that I never wrote with the intention to be part of that group of people, and I don't necessarily feel aversion to that group of people at all. In fact, I feel really thankful that that exists, because I think it was the main reason why I was able to have any literary success. But I also dislike having my writing grouped in with so many people whose writing is so different than mine and whose goals with writing are so different than mine.
What about the fatality, that likely to be dead before 40?
I think I was definitely, or maybe am currently, more likely than the average person to die before 40, and I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world if I did die before 40.
there are people for whom this is not the best existence imaginable, that one can imagine something more beautiful or more interesting, or, you know, there are a lot of different choices. I think one of the jobs of literature is to make available alternatives to life. Now, I thought we'd begin by hearing some tweets at random. Would you like to start, Mira?
Oh, sure. Okay. Let me try to find tweets that don't include profanity that I'm not allowed to say on the radio. Okay, is there any way for me to earn money by making people's lives a little bit worse with my grating personality? a homeless guy with rainbow cornrows got on the subway and said, "I'm an alien from outer space," then played extremely loud saxophone until three children cried. The goal of all relationships should be mutual suicide instead of marriage. I feel like I should lose a lot of weight out of courtesy to the people who will eventually have to lift my corpse. Did anyone else's fear of Santa Claus during childhood manifest in a cool, repressed sex fantasy during adolescence? I'm researching how to make crack pipes on the computer at work. The same smelly homeless guy was on the N train 4 hours ago and the L train now, or I'm outsourcing my own smelliness to an innocent homeless guy. All I want is unlimited money and unlimited drugs, and for someone to rip my face off and light me on fire, then push me out of an airplane. Is that so much to ask? Why does the Pope get to stop being the Pope, but I have to be me for the rest of my life? I want to gain 100 pounds so I can devote the rest of my life to losing 100 pounds. My publicist is on speed and threatening to kill me. I want Rick Ross to sit on my face. I dreamt my ex-boyfriend's dad went bankrupt after paying for a surgery to get a second penis attached to his forehead. I got drunk and sent my dad an email last night that said, "Your dog is irritating," with the subject, "I hate the dog." Why do you love it when I call you Big Papa, but it makes you feel weird when I call you Daddy? 6 years ago, I used the word molested while telling a cop that a homeless person grabbed my boobs. The cop said, "Is he your dad? And is your dad a hobo?" Last night, an extremely tall person spent 20 minutes trying to convince me that Vin Diesel's real name is Spaceship. Lying on a couch and eating guacamole at 40% consciousness level during a party at my ex-boyfriend's neighbor's boyfriend's house. I want my obituary to read, "She died because she got overstimulated while watching Blue's Clues and porn at the same time."
Okay. I would like to hear some from Tao.
Okay. Imagine myself looking at Twitter and old photos and other things on my iPhone while unselfconsciously waiting in line to be incinerated. Walking in search of coconut or almond yogurt. I'm eating a salad in a movie theater lobby instead of in my room for the air conditioning. If you believe you're in a maze, you instantly gain purpose, but nothing matters until you fulfill that purpose of exiting the maze. Think I might start talking to myself when alone. I want to buy an incredibly powerful sponge. Feel like I could improvise Olympics-level gymnastics in a life-death situation. Imagine myself lying to everyone that I've read all of Dostoevsky. While trying to sleep, felt that if people tried hard enough, they could fly using only their bodies. Man mission into space with no return plan or destination. Feel like I'm in an extremely low-budget sci-fi movie that's millions of hours of footage that will never be edited into an actual movie. Imagine if every pro basketball, baseball, football, hockey, soccer, tennis player, and boxer alive also each had their own monthly book club. Dark comedy in which Werner Herzog can't stop lying, and in every scene says, "I know it's going to seem like I'm lying, but," multiple times. Living in fear of one's own antisocial tendencies. Intuited exactly how to rearrange my room while looking at my room stoned. Low self-esteem caused by reoccurring nightmares featuring helplessness, incompetency, confusion, and an overall lack of efficacy. Imagine being one of the humans who was born in 34,563 BC and died in 34,533 BC. The distracting feeling of disbelief when I'm finally doing something I've procrastinated on for a notable amount of time. Fantasized about adopting a toy poodle last night while trying to sleep. performance art piece in which I lure the CIA into assassinating me in a manner that can't be proven or disproven. Feel able to control my experience of the water's temperature to a degree that I unconsciously smiled while showering very stoned. JFK International Dystopian Airport. The airport's really bad, JFK Airport. Reading some incoherent-seeming emails, sending some incoherent-seeming emails. Intuited the evolutionary basis for procrastination, being that it allows time for your unconscious to work on whatever problem slash task.
Okay. Now, my guests are Tao Lin and Mira Gonzalez. They are reading from selected tweets. It's a book beautifully published by the Short Flight Long Drive Books Division of Hobart Publishing. And it's, I guess, the place here to begin to say that a lot of the literary presses, smaller presses, independent presses, are publishing books that the mainstream will no longer take a risk on. And they're publishing them well, and they're even bringing the writers around the country on tour, which never used to happen before. So literature is changing, and so are our lives. And one of the ways in which our lives have changed is that we are constantly inventing new uses for the web. One of them, not so new, is tweeting. So do you want Twitter and tweeting to become a viable art form? Does it matter?
Absolutely, I would say definitely. I would say that Twitter, in the same way that haikus are a very specific form of writing that you have to adhere to in a specific way, Twitter is also like that. And it's a new form, and it's a form that exists on the internet. And I think that that's very scary to people, or that's very just new and unfamiliar. So it's difficult for people to compare Twitter to something like a haiku, because haikus have existed for so long and Twitter has not. But I personally put as much effort into Twitter as I would put into a poem or a short story or a novel, because I think that that's the sort of effort that the form itself deserves. And I think it's a form that really suits the type of writing that I do. And I'm really grateful that that form has existed. And I think that it will continue to exist into the future for other writers as well. I was 17 when I started tweeting. You know, you could be a 14-year-old summer tweeting, or you could be someone who's really putting literary effort into tweets. And it kind of gives the same platform to people who have a short attention span, or people who maybe don't read as much or don't know about the literary world. And I think that that's also something that's very frightening to people who are used to traditional literature, that now this platform is not just for people who have agents and people who can submit to big presses, but for anybody who can have access to the internet. And I think that that's really important to me.
Now, Tao Lin just wrote a novel that I'm an admirer of called Taipei. What is your attitude toward tweeting? Is it like a vacation from novel writing? Does it have equal weight? What is your opinion?
I would say it has equal weight, and it's just another form, like short stories, novellas, haikus, poems, that I'm interested in working in. And Twitter is especially interesting as a form to me, because with short stories, the form is based on a number of words. And then with sonnets, let's say, it's based on lines. And then with haikus, in English at least, it's based on syllables. And with Twitter, you're based on characters, because it's limited to 140 characters. So my mind is working in a different way when I'm tweeting. I'm focusing on each character, because a lot of the time I'm editing it down to 140 characters. So it's a very good exercise for writers to think about language in a different way.
the ones that aren't funny, and sometimes the ones that are funny, are also so sad. I'm not going to call it cry for help. I'm not. I don't believe that. But there's no way not to see that the people who are doing this late at night, maybe high, maybe drunk, maybe both, maybe neither, are feeling a kind of, or feeling or imitating a kind of desperation or anguish, and that part of the fun is seeing who can sound bleakest. Am I right in some way?
I think to a degree. I think that for me personally, writing is something that I've always been able to turn to when I feel alienated from the rest of the world, or when I feel some sort of strong emotion that is difficult for me to convey in spoken word or convey in any other way. And Twitter specifically has an immediacy to it, in which you can tweet and then, you know, you immediately receive favorites, or you know, people are immediately seeing what you're writing. So in that sense, the desperate feelings that I used to feel and then, you know, write in a notebook or something like that were more easily conveyed on Twitter and more satisfying for me because it is more immediate and it gets to your audience instantly.
I see. So not desperation, but an alleviation of desperation.
Yes. I would say that tweets that I post that are desperate sounding or bleak sounding is a way for me to alleviate those feelings.
I agree. If I'm feeling really bad and I articulate it into writing, I immediately feel better, especially if I've expressed it in an original way. Like, I wouldn't just tweet, like, I want to die. I feel like I would want to edit that into something interesting or funny and then tweet it. And that's where I get the most alleviation of feeling bad.
And what if no one responds?
That happened.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like sometimes I'll be confident enough in the tweet that I like it enough personally that it doesn't matter to me if people don't respond. But sometimes I'll feel less secure about a tweet and less confident in it myself. And then when people don't respond, that makes me feel more insecure, but still alleviating of the desperate feelings.
It still alleviates because our bleakest tweets are on accounts that we created to hide from,
yeah.
For my case, to hide from my mom and other family that might read it and feel really worried about me.
Yeah, that's true. Like, my bleakest account was in the end of the book. I have an account called Mira Crying, which was an account that I made probably during my heaviest period of drug use and during a very bad breakup that I was going through. And I think only, I don't know, 6 people followed it or something like that. And on that count, I felt even more free to express, you know, my darkest feelings and my most desperate feelings. And that actually felt more relieving to me than tweeting from my main account, where I felt slightly more inhibited just based on the fact that it had a large audience.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from KCRW. I'm talking with Mira Gonzalez and Tal Lin about their book, Selected Tweets. We'll continue after this short break.
If you're listening to Bookworm, chances are you're a big reader. Connect with other book lovers. Join our virtual book club on Facebook. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm for more info. Thanks.
This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Mira Gonzalez and Tal Lin about their recent book, Selected Tweets. It's drawn from real tweets that have been gathered together and edited into a kind of, well, patchwork quilt, some funny, some despairing, together the two provide a really different way of looking at how to use units like sentences. You know, I had every reason to be kind of doubtful. I'm older than you are. You know, doubtfulness comes with my nature. But then I realized, wait, extremely short texts, I know them. Writers used to write entire books of aphorisms. Kafka wrote very brief parables. Aesop wrote very brief fables. We've been having very brief forms of expression through the history of literature. And then I was talking to Tao, and I mentioned one of my favorite writers, whose name is Fernando Pessoa. After his death, his texts were gathered together. He'd called them the Book of Disquiet. He liked to write brief sentence-level entries under different names that he called his heteronyms. So in addition to writing his own poetry, he invented poets. One of them, I think, was a retired Portuguese accountant named Bernard Soares, and he's the creator of the Book of Disquiet. And I was thinking, oh boy, I'm going to tell Tao about this, and Tao said, oh, I'm fascinated by Pessoa, so is Mira. And I said, oh, well, that's the best, when it turns out that the writers in a tradition are aware of the tradition. How did you discover Pessoa, Tao?
I don't remember, but I think it might have been in college when I was searching the internet for things like depressing, lonely books or depressing, lonely novel. I think I actually found Gene Rhys through this method also. Mm-hmm. And that's how I found him. And I read the Book of Disquiet and I liked it a lot.
It's unforgettable. I have right in front of me five different translations because it is so powerful. People have been translating it since the 50s, and we get better and better. The best I've found are the ones by the most recent translator, Richard Zenith is his name, and even his translations are available in several volumes. And you, Mira, he's a lot less funny than you are. He's very, he's sort of stratospherically miserable.
Yeah, I think I'm miserable also. I think that that's why I identify with him so much. I think that my taste, well, I think that the reason why I'm funny or try to be funny is to cope with the general misery of being alive and a human being in the world. I think it's just really one of the only ways that I know how to cope with the type of misery that Pessoa is trying to convey in his books. So in that sense, I think that our writing, though it is very different, is sort of two different methods of dealing with the same thing. My taste in books, generally speaking, is books that are by depressed people about depressed people. And they're generally not funny because depressed people are generally not funny. But my specific way of coping with it is by trying to be funny.
I think that somehow or other, like Kafka, these kinds of texts, wherever they're written, they belong to the universe of writing. That is to say, they're written by the soul. Other kinds of writing are written by the mind. Some are written by the imagination. Some are written with a full awareness of the physical body. But these kinds of things are somehow or other an attempt to permit the soul to speak. Would you say I was being pretentious and ridiculous, Tao?
I would never say that, but but I haven't just thought about the word soul specifically in terms of Pessoa yet. I associate him more with the word imagination.
Uh-huh.
Do you connect those two words in any way?
What I'd say is that the imagination has room for whimsy, and that the soul has eliminated that. But I have no privy information. No one came and taught me. It's just my intuition that tells me that the soul has a greater interest in austerity than the imagination.
I feel like I would... I wouldn't say that the soul necessarily cannot be whimsical. I would say that... I again, don't generally use the term soul and have not thought about that in a long time in terms of writing or maybe ever. But the way that you're explaining it now, I would say that the way that I write is definitely more from the soul and less from the imagination. It's more rooted in my own body and my own life and my own feelings and the inner workings of my own mind. And that, for me, oftentimes results in whimsy. It results in jokes and trying to be funny and trying to make myself laugh and make other people laugh. And I would say that that definitely comes from the soul, for sure.
I'm still trying to get my head around the word soul. Sorry. You keep talking. You're doing
I mean,
good.
I have a hard time with the word soul. Also, I've never used the soul in this context. I guess I would more, I'd be quicker to say mind or emotion or experience before I would say soul. But I think that that's what you're trying to convey with the word soul.
No, no. I'm trying to say what we used to mean when we said soul, which went beyond conscience into the poetry of all being, whether we liked it or not, and beyond our desire for a better world. Only the world that is, only the desolation of being aware that that is something that each person perceives for him or herself and lives with however he or she can, and that it's devastating, that it's really, you know, it's what makes living so hard, I think. Have you wrapped your mind around it?
Yeah, I agree. I get and agree with what you just said. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I've been talking with Tal Lin and Mira Gonzalez. They together took their tweets and made a double book of selected tweets published by Short Flight Long Drive Books. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
It's always a pleasure. You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from selected tweets at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to David Sobel. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm. He is a bookworm. She is a bookworm. We are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm, when Louisa Hall is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.